back to the Panthers podcast. Max Henson and Brian Strickland here with you as always. And we're talking about that Thursday night game against the Eagles to start it off. And it was really, I think, exactly what we expected it to be. It was two really, really good teams going at it on a primetime stage. This game was close up until the end. It was a one-possession game until the final drive for Carolina, and they just weren't able to pull it out. But Brian, I turn it to you. Do you agree? Is that pretty much the game that you expected to see?
Yeah, disappointing outcome, certainly. Very good game for Thursday night, by the way. Sometimes you wonder even regardless of who's playing, what kind of game you're going to get. But it was – it's like almost like a playoff game, I felt like, in some ways. But that word disappointed I use is a word that Coach Rivera used to kick off his press conference because, you know, he knew how much the team put into this game. It was obvious. This was a big stage moment, so to speak. Not that they don't value every game, but kind of left it all out on the field and came up short. But not discouraged. That was not a word he used because, you know, as we'll get into, it was right there for the taking against a team that in the Eagles is now tied for the best record in the NFL after the Chiefs fell Sunday night.
You can make the argument that the Eagles are the best team in the NFL right now.
Yeah.
I mean, right?
Yeah, we could have a long, probably boring discussion about that, right? I mean, who's the favorite for the Super Bowl right now?
Yeah.
We were talking about that. The parity right now is amazing, but the Panthers are toward the top end of that parity, clearly still in first place in the division despite that outcome. So, again, disappointed to lose, of course, always disappointed, but not discouraged because I don't think it really shook to me any of my thoughts about how competitive this team is.
Yeah, I mean, I got the sense there was a lot of frustration from Panther fans after that game, and I base that pretty much just off of what we're seeing on Twitter, you know, the mentions to us immediately after the game. And I know it's an emotional time, but I was surprised at how many people were up in arms about the Panthers falling to 4-2 after having just lost to a team that improved to 5-1 in a close game. You know, there's not a tremendous reason to panic. You know, of course, there are some issues, and we're going to get into some of the issues that popped up again Thursday night. But this Panthers team is sitting in a pretty good spot right now. They're 4-2. Yes, they dropped another home game, which they're frustrated about. You know, these two losses at home are something that these players find unacceptable. You know, your home games, you want to hold serve there, and then you want to, you know, go out and try to get your share on the road. So to lose the last two at home has been tough, but those two previous road wins set them in a good spot. And as you said, Brian, discouraged, but by no means is this sound off major alarms for me, that result against the Eagles.
Yeah, just an aside, it made me wonder, too, about the fan reaction after the game. I wonder, for like season ticket holders, if, you know, the home games hurt a little more, especially when you look at the schedule. You mentioned two straight losses at home. So the last home win was September 17th. Then you go on the road again for the next 2 days. We're in a tough stretch with 4 out of 5 on the road. So the next time the Panthers come home is November 5th against the Falcons. I mean, that probably can't be that much fun for fans that attend the games to be looking at almost a two-month stretch without a win. It also speaks to how well this team's playing on the road, that you could go that long without a win at home when you're 4-2.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, let's get into first – one of the look, we're always going to start with Cam Newton first, generally speaking. So let's just do that.
Okay.
Cam's game, I thought, was fascinating just because he played incredibly hard. As Mike Shula said afterwards, he thought it was the hardest he'd ever seen Cam Newton play. And I don't. There's been a lot of games where Cam Newton has played really hard, so that's tough to say. But it speaks to kind of the impression he made on his offensive coordinator with the way he went out there, threw it career high 52 times in that game against the Eagles. And so you saw some really good things from Cam, and then you saw, of course, on his stat line, the 3 interceptions. And that was really the story of that game.
It was, yeah.
Was those game-changing turnovers at the end of the first half and the beginning of the second half to set up the Eagles with what Cam called layups to punch it into the end zone. And he took accountability for those interceptions, which I thought was impressive from him, and I think a lot of other people did as well, even though we know 2 of the 3 were not on him at all.
Right, yeah, and the two specifically that were not were the ones that set up the Eagles for really short fields. I mean, the Eagles, you know, are certainly potent, dangerous on offense, but the Panthers' defense, you know, stepped up to the task, only allowing one sustained drive to end up in the end zone. But, yeah, those two turnovers. I mean, that was the game, pretty much, if you think about it. That's the case a lot, of course. I mean, we break it, the game down a million different ways, and then the reality is the team that turns the ball over the least wins most of the time, and especially turnovers like that. I mean, when we saw that Fletcher Cox was going to be active for the game for the Eagles, there's about a back and forth. Will he play? Won't he play? Mm-hmm. And then he did, and you wondered, hey, you know, he's just coming off an injury. Will he be a factor? He was definitely a factor.
He sure was. Yeah.
And that set up, that, you know, the first interception with him pushing the pocket and getting his hand to his arm up, his hand up to affect the Cam pass, that set up a short touchdown for the Eagles. And then, you know, talk about layups. Like, Cam took what looked like a layup pass to Jonathan Stewart, kind of out in the flat. And that was just fluky, obviously. And the guy basically on the ground comes up with an interception, and you're looking at a one-yard touchdown drive there. Mm-hmm. You know, to the point about Mike Shula saying Cam played hard, I mean, he left it all on the field. There's no doubt about that. Still don't know how that amazing – I mean, that would have been a highlight reel play for him when he scrambled to the left and dove for the pylon, and they reviewed it and said he wasn't
in.
That
was incredible. I still don't understand how that wasn't a touchdown, right, by the way. I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't get that at all. And then,
it was like a five-yard leap through the
air.
It was
crazy. I mean, I can remember, like, him taking off live, and I was like, well, he's going to get a first down here, but he's certainly not going to sniff the end zone. And then it's like, well, I think that's a touchdown.
Amazing. Yeah.
But anyway, so then, you know, after that, you do wonder if, you know, if he was a little worn down because of that play, because of all the passes he threw.
I think it's fair to ask that question, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, he led the team in rushing with 11 attempts for 71 yards. As I said, he threw the ball 52 times, and he was, you know, shouldering the weight of this entire offense throughout that game. And then, of course, at the end of it, in that fourth quarter, the final two possessions for Carolina, they have a chance to come back and win it.
Yeah.
And you didn't see the offense at its best there, right, and things didn't really quite click. A couple passes from Cam, you know, I think there was some hearts and mouths, and like, oh my God, you know.
Yeah.
And then, as has been talked about at length, Christian McCaffrey on that fourth and one, you know, had a lot of room to run if that ball is put on the money. Of course, a blitzing Eagle kind of got in Cam's way, and he had forced to kind of – the trajectory of the throw was thrown off a little bit. But if that ball gets to McCaffrey, we could be talking about Panthers' win right now. But I do think your point is valid, Brian. The wear and tear on Cam throughout the course of that game, and then at the end of it, when it's on his arm again to try to win it, if that had any sort of effect on the way the offense was able to perform.
Yeah, you wonder. I mean, every play seemed precarious, like something disastrous might happen. But, I mean, in that situation, hey, it's kind of a no-lose situation. You're trying to pull out the game. But there were definitely some passes where it was like, you know, is he okay out there, so to speak? Not to be overly dramatic about it, but he just wasn't on his game, and he'll be the first to tell you that he was not there toward the end of the game. You know, football's a tough game. I mean, it was on short rest. He's, you know, still in some ways nursing the shoulder, so to speak. I will say, as far as timing goes, obviously it'd be awesome if the Panthers had pulled out that game, but more recovery time for him going into the Bears with that kind of the mini bye, as we call it, coming off that Thursday night game.
I mean, I think, you know, if we're being honest here, he just needs more help. You know, he needs more help from the running game, and that's
right.
And we say that, of course, we don't mean Cam Newton running for 70 yards. We mean guys like Jonathan Stewart and Christian McCaffrey, in sort of a traditional sense, being able to provide that balance to this offense where you can turn around, hand the ball off, and they can be productive. It hasn't been that way the past 2 weeks. I mean, just a shocking stat line for Jonathan Stewart: 8 carries, minus 4 yards.
Yeah.
I mean, just but by far the worst, you know, the worst day of his career statistically. Right. And this is a growing concern, Brian. And I turn it to you as to, you know, your thoughts on where this running game is right now and what has to happen to change it, because we all know that is what this offense has always been built around under Ron Rivera, is a physical, consistent running game.
Right, and you could see Stu's frustration too. I mean, I do think even the fluky interception that we talked about, where it went off his arms, like, watching the play live, it seemed like he started to run with the ball before he had it, as they say. I think just anxious, like, oh, I have the ball maybe in space here. Maybe I can get a few yards here. And, you know, you saw him upset after a couple of plays where, I mean, he pretty much didn't have a chance. I mean, I will say, to that point, it was a – a disappointing day for Stewart. It was a frustrating day. I don't doubt his ability as a running back. I don't think that's what we're talking about here at all. I think he's, you know, ready to bring this team still what it needs in the running game. Still trust him certainly with that. I don't think he's hit any sort of proverbial plus 30 wall, you know, anything like that. But what it is, you know, it's a little bit baffling. I mean, you know, Coach Rivera has definitely pointed toward the offensive line in each of the last two games, which, you know, generally the group's doing a really good job in pass defense. But they just seem like swallowed up, overwhelmed. Yeah. And again, a very good defense. We have to say that. The Eagles were second in the league in rush defense.
Yeah, we knew it was going to be tough, and especially when we saw Fletcher Cox was going to be active. Right. We knew, okay, this is going to be a tough challenge to run the ball.
Right, but that was pretty extreme. The way, you know, there seemed to be no holes whatsoever for – obviously, again, we said Cam had a good running day to kind of salvage that. But, yeah, I mean, you would suspect that – come Sunday in Chicago, it's going to be, guys, this can't happen again. We've got to establish something here with the run. They showed in Detroit they can win without it, but team, you don't keep winning if you can't run the ball.
No, you're absolutely right. And you know that going into Chicago, that's going to be priority number one for this offense, is building some confidence and running the ball effectively and just allowing this offense to have some balance. You know, you don't have to run the ball for 175 yards.
Right.
If you can give yourself some balance offensively, and we've seen Cam and his arm is more than capable of leading this team to victories right now, but you just got to give him some help and give this offense a little more balance so that you're in a position for success consistently. Because as you mentioned, Brian, it's not a formula for success to have to pass the ball 52 times week in and week out. That's definitely not what the Panthers want to do going forward. Let's look at the defensive side of the ball. It was another strong outing for the Carolina defense that was put in very difficult situations. They are number one right now in the NFC in total defense, which I think surprised a lot of people, and we shared that on Twitter. But if you're going to talk about the Carolina defense and what happened on Thursday night, you're going to talk about what happened to Luke Kuechly. I mean, that was the story, and for obvious reasons, everybody very concerned to see Luke walk off the field and enter the concussion protocol.
Yeah.
So here we are again, Brian.
Yeah, again to the, you know, just saying what I saw live, so to speak. I remember I noticed him kind of hunched a little bit behind the line of scrimmage, kind of where the Eagles would realistically huddle for the next play, and then, you know, kind of quickly stand up, so to speak, you know, enough to get the attention of the medical staff, though, the way he kind of slumped over. I had no idea what had happened. You know, we eventually saw a replay. It was a little while before he even saw it. And, you know, it's like, you know, neck area, shoulder area, that seemed to be what he was favoring. So it's pretty surprising, you know, just to the naked eye to see him head to the locker room. And honestly, I thought, hey, you know, not good to see him head to the locker room, but I think he's going to be okay. Of course, we want to think positively along those lines. There's no doubt about
it. You would hope that everybody does, right?
Right.
You hope for the best in that situation.
But then it didn't happen. You know, so eventually we were told he was in the concussion protocol. That remains the case. You know, it's just one of those situations where you can't really predict how it's going to play out. Nobody can. I mean, I do know that certainly the default position with any player, I mean, Luke has that history of being in the protocol before, of course, but with any player, this organization has a history of being, you know, particularly careful with guys who are in that situation, have their best interest in mind, first and foremost. And, you know, we got a few days here before the next game. We'll just kind of, I'm sure there'll be a little bit of a Luke Kuechly daily vigil to see what's going on. It's only human nature.
Yeah, I mean, this is very difficult because everybody knows how badly Luke wants to be out there and how much, you know, he just doesn't really even want to go back into his past with what he's dealt with. This was so just excited to move forward and be out there with his teammates. And so to see that, you know, it's very, very hard. And I think the fans especially, too. You know, the players afterwards were asked if they felt like the kind of life was sucked out of the building after that happened. And even from our seats in the press box, it kind of felt that way. I mean, because everybody knows what Luke means to this team. And everybody knows what Luke has been through with prior concussions. And there's no doubt about it. I think everybody was concerned. Now, the players and coaches down the sideline, they've got a job to do. They've got they're wired away and they've been through enough injuries in this game before where, as cliche as that whole next man up thing is, I mean, you got to get somebody out there and you got to play the next snap.
Right.
They're not going to, you know, delay the game. So you understand from that point of view. But after everybody has some time to think about it, obviously, it's you want what's best for Luke, the person, and as you mentioned, Brian, this team has a history of being careful using extra precaution when it comes to this type of stuff, and we'll see how this week plays out.
Yeah, the thing about the life being sucked out, I kind of thought about, I got to watch the Texans and the Chiefs on Sunday Night Football the week before, I think it was, and, J.J. Watt going out. I mean, that was pretty crazy, but by the end of that game, kind of was back to normal, so to speak. You get to that next man up mentality. David Mayo was that next man up. He, conceivably could be that next man up going forward. You just don't know. And, I will say if, Luke, I mean, it goes without saying a huge part of this team, but at the same time, he is just a part of this team. Don't take that the wrong way. And, the reality is, Mayo did a good job in that role. This team has shown before that it can win games without Luke Kuechly. You don't want to be in that situation. But, number one defense in the NFC is not all about number 59. So, if Luke's not out there for a couple games for this week, I still feel confident in this defense. Of course, we'll get into the Bears, specific to that matchup as well. I still like the way this defense matches up.
I mean, I do too. I really like the way Carolina's front is playing. One thing we didn't even get a chance to mention in the Eagles game is the fact that Julius Peppers, right off the bat, got his 150th sack out of the way. The guy continues to amaze. We talk about it every time on the show, just the ridiculousness of Julius Peppers and his production right now. But that front is playing good football. Of course, the linebacker position for Carolina has a lot of depth with TD and Shaq, of course, flanking the middle linebacker spot. And David Mayo is more than capable of stepping in there and, I think, helping getting this defense through any absence from Kuechly going forward. The secondary has been interesting for Carolina the past few weeks, obviously. Without Kirk Coleman in there, you've seen Jairus Byrd and Colin Jones. And on the outside corner spot opposite James Bradbury, who's been playing really, really well, you've had a rotation of Darrell Worley and Kevon Seymour. So some moving parts going on in the Carolina secondary. But as a whole, to your point, Brian, I do think that this defense, as the numbers indicate, where they are right now in total defense, is going to be okay. And I think, again, if they can just continue to find a way to try to get some takeaways. Peppers got him one off the bat, but it's been a bunch of games now where it's the other team who's coming up with more takeaways. And again, we talked about, just formulas for success or lack thereof. And that's certainly one of them. That's a formula for failure if the other team is the one that's continuing to get, no matter how it comes up, how they come up with them, if they're the ones getting takeaways, that's hard to overcome. So Carolina trying to get one of those, what do they say? Come in bunches or contagious, whatever cliche you want to use there. They just want to catch that turnover bug sometime soon.
You said moving parts in the secondary, but they are moving well, so to speak. I mean, the good news is they're holding the line. They're getting something out of Kevon Seymour, seeing that he can be a guy that can help now and in the future. The safety rotation in place of Kirk Coleman is functioning well. And then you have Kurt back. Who knows when? I mean, it could be relatively soon that Kirk Coleman's back. But, when you talk about turnover numbers and you talk about interception numbers, of course you think about the secondary first. One interception for the team so far this year. And that was Luke Kuechly, by the way.
Yeah.
So no interceptions for the secondary. Kurt Coleman's obviously a ball hawk type. James Bradbury, he's played great. Just hasn't been able to secure an interception. We thought, maybe even you can't predict it, but he's capable of putting up decent interception numbers. So, interesting opportunity Sunday against a rookie quarterback in his third start, Mitch Trubisky, a UNC product, to see, with the Panthers' pass rush, if it can get
now
going.
Before you keep going, Mitch or Mitchell?
Oh, boy. So I believe that he kind of did.
I think it's Mitchell.
I thought he discounted the reports saying he wanted it to be Mitchell, because it's definitely Mitch at Carolina. Then I feel like there was this big story that he wanted it to be Mitchell. And then wasn't it that his mom wanted it to be that his mom calls him Mitchell or something like that?
I've pulled up his player profile on NFL.com, and it does say Mitchell. And I just know there was a lot made out of this, so I want to make sure we get this right.
Jared, what'd you call him on Panthers.com in our on Panthers.com, he's listed as Mitch. We might have to go correct that right now. I don't know that. This requires further research. Yeah, we're hearing that most stories out there on Google say Mitch. So it's a controversy.
One thing I read about him is that his nickname is Mr. Biscuit. Have you ever heard that story?
No.
Yeah. Somebody I guess it was an assistant coach or somebody was talking to somebody else, and they asked about the quarterback, and he's pronounced his name, Mitch Trubisky, and I guess they just really didn't hear the pronunciation. Wow. And say, did you say Mr. Biscuit?
That's awesome.
And
yeah.
That's how it stuck, and something fitting because, you know, the Carolina here in Charlotte, biscuits are kind of a big part of the cuisine. So
yeah, that's and by the way, my son calls Jacoby Brissett Jacoby Brisket. So no, it's a good theme, and I love biscuits and brisket. So yeah. I'm more excited about Sunday all of a sudden.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about Trubisky. Why don't we just do that? We'll call him
or
Trubisky.
Just talk about food.
We know we could do that. I mean, we can keep people here for a while if we start down that road. But Trubisky, as you mentioned, Brian, coming off his second career start, a victory in overtime at Baltimore. Watching some of the highlights from that, you saw a guy who moves really well in the pocket, has a really live arm, made some really impressive throws. And then I think you also, you look at the stat line afterwards and you see he's completing 48% of his passes. He's a rookie. I mean, there are flashes of brilliance, flashes of why he was selected so high. Number two overall in the NFL draft. And there's also, you know, indications as to why it's difficult as a rookie to play quarterback in this league. And that's all something that factors into what the Panthers are going to be facing.
We've seen this story before. I mean, the Bears invested a lot in him, but they also invested in the idea initially that he's not ready yet. He didn't play a lot of games at North Carolina pretty much 1 year as a starter. You know, they had signed Mike Glennon in the offseason, so they were going to show patience with Trubisky, and you know how that goes sometimes. Things not going the way you hope, and, you know, maybe things are going well in practice, so they put the Tar Heel in for the former Wolfpack quarterback, and it is that mixed bag you're talking about. And that should continue for a while, and it will also because there's some talent on that offense, but this is not a juggernaut offense in recent years, regardless of who's under center. Mm-hmm. So they're still looking for answers. You know, the running game is something he can and should try to lean on.
No doubt.
Jordan Howard, you know, quite a running back story there. Tariq Cohen, the rookie, a good change of pace guy from North Carolina A&T just down the road. But, of course, the Panthers don't want to allow them to lean on the running game. They want to put it on Trubisky. And the way the Panthers have been defending the run, they're certainly capable of kind of forcing his hand and forcing him to either make plays or make mistakes. And there we go. Maybe those turnovers come in bunches.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of, I guess, tied everything we talked about into that right there, Brian. But I think, look, every week you're going to hear the same old thing from the Panthers defense. We want to make a team one-dimensional. We want to stop the run.
Right.
Okay, that I think is, without a doubt, this week, I mean, you could really underline that as many times as possible because you're going up against a rookie quarterback. The first thing you want to do is force him to beat you.
Right.
And so, you know, that's a tough ask against Jordan Howard, who's been tremendous, had a beastly run against the Ravens in overtime to set up that win. I mean, he's a really, really good player. But that's going to be priority number one for the Carolina defense, stopping the run and put it on Trubisky. And then on the flip side, I really think this game is all about the run game. For Carolina's defense and Carolina's offense, as we talked about, can they run the ball against the Bears' defense, who happens to be number three in the NFC in total defense? They're playing really well defensively. They don't have a lot of big names on that defense. But John Fox has always been a guy who's prided himself on coaching teams that run the ball well and play good defense. That's no different. So I expect a dogfight out in Chicago, no doubt about it. I think this Bears team has every right to feel a bit of a lift after that win in Baltimore. And just the Trubisky factor, even if he's going to make mistakes, even if he's, you know, like we said, not even completing half of his throws, there seems to be a just kind of light he's brought to the whole franchise in that they have something that they can kind of see into the future with.
Right.
And that tends to, I think, lift everybody in the huddle, everybody on the sideline, and just knowing that they hope is getting better and better. And when you have something like that to kind of lean on, I think, that whole locker room, I think, right now has changed for the better ever since Trubisky was put in there.
Yeah, and even before going to Trubisky, again, you know, speaking to what this defense is capable of, this is a team that beat the Steelers. I mean, the Steelers have been up and down, just like everybody in this league, but they beat the Steelers in Chicago. I remember very vividly week one, they had the Falcons dead to right in week one in Chicago as well and couldn't make a play near the goal line at the end. So, dogfight's a good word to put it. I mean, no reason obviously we'd love it, but no reason to think this is going to be easy by any stretch. I mean, like so many games in this league, this could be more of a toss-up than I think maybe some people realize because they look at rookie quarterback. Bears have struggled the last couple of years. They're 2-4, but you know, it's going to be a tough game.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about it. This will be a tough game. You got to go on the road again. Look, the Panthers have shown that they can play pretty good football on the road. So maybe we will see the best of the Panthers in another road environment out at Soldier Field. But with the way that Bears defense has played and the confidence that I think they've got right now in knowing that Trubisky, like I said, it just kind of brings them a little bit of an intangible. And we know their running game is solid. This is going to be a game. Let's talk a little bit more about Chicago, but you alluded to it, Brian. I mean, we love a good chat about food anytime we can do it. So I think we have very different views on one of Chicago's hallmark dishes.
Yes.
The deep dish
right.
pizza.
Yeah.
You're a big fan, correct?
I am. It's, you know, Gino's East, Giordano's. You can't go wrong with either one of those. I will say I wouldn't want to eat it every day. It's something. I mean, it is dense, to say
That's
the least. You have to have patience. That, to me, though, is not a strength when it comes to food, but it also makes me appreciate what's put into a deep dish pizza. I mean, you go to a place, they say it's going to be like 45 minutes before it's ready. Like, who waits 45 minutes after ordering food? It's got to be good, right? I mean, I love the cheese, the sauce. You know, I don't even care about the toppings. I'm usually a toppings guy, but I think it just kind of speaks for itself. But again, I'm glad it's just an every once in a while thing. I would not want to eat that every day.
Yeah. I mean, I see what you're saying. You're making good points. I just don't think it's that good, if I'm being honest.
I just think it's
a little overwhelming. It's just a lot to deal with.
Yeah.
And I'm from New Jersey, a guy who's used to kind of, you know, going in and grabbing a slice,
right?
And just it's a very different style of pizza. And to me, I lean much more towards the thin crust than I do the deep dish thick kind of it. And that's just always been my thing. So I can appreciate the deep dish pizza in Chicago, but it's definitely not
but
my thing.
You don't enjoy the workmanship involved?
That's one thing I'll say. I understand and can appreciate the work that's going into creating that thing. I just don't think it's worth all that.
I understand, because in Jersey, you're like just there's the pizza already sitting there. It's pre-made.
Right.
It's just fired in the oven and get it a little bit hot. It's kind of like reheated pizza.
That's true.
I say this. How many times have I enjoyed a slice like that? Quite a few in my life. So,
right.
You know, you're right. I mean, given the quotient of time versus taste, I mean, you may well be onto something. But every once in a while, I mean, I once managed to bring slices back for my family from Chicago, like timed it where it was in the fridge at the hotel, then put it on ice and like held it in my lap in the plane. So I mean,
that's the most Brian Strickland thing ever, right there.
But could you do that with one of your favorites, Max? I don't think it would travel as well. Which didn't you have an alternative suggestion to the pizza? I believe when you're up
in Chicago.
Yeah,
I mean, my preferred Chicago eating destination would be the Italian beef sandwich.
Yeah.
That's Portillo's is what I've had before. I'm really into that. That to me, if I was going to pick between, the Chicago dish that you've got to have, I would definitely go with the beef sandwich. And now the other one that people always throw out there too, and I know I've got a buddy of mine from college who was from Chicago, just very passionate about all things Cubs, Blackhawks, Bears, everything about Chicago food. You know, the Chicago style hot dog.
I thought you were going to say that. I could read your mind.
I mean, we've known each other for a while now. We're at that point where we can pretty much do that. But I mean, the Chicago style hot dog is another thing to me that I've just I don't really think it's that great.
I'll stick with JJ's Red Hots locally in Charlotte for that type of hot dog. I guess they tout that as a Chicago style. I enjoy that, so I'm fine. I've got a local equivalent to that. I don't feel like there's a local equivalent anywhere close with the pizza or with the Italian beef, which I do give thumbs up to. Now that you cannot take on a plane, like I said, that's the one thing you can't let that sit around because the bread will get soggy really fast with that.
Yeah,
but I mean, I'm there with you. I think I might have to get like a small pizza and an Italian beef sandwich.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and again, I mean, the Chicago style hot dog, it's just a lot that goes on
right.
there, you know. And it's like, so you've got to have the pickle spear, the celery salt, the neon relish. I know everybody's like, you got to have the neon relish.
I don't like any of those three things.
Right,
you
the
just
diced
mentioned.
Onions. I know you're a big onion guy.
Yeah.
Yep. And it's on this poppy seed bun. It's okay. got the fresh tomatoes. I mean, again, I appreciate the fact that that's like a special thing
yeah.
for that area of the country, for that city. But
yeah.
do I think it tastes all that good? Like,
yeah.
not really.
Yeah, yeah, it would just overwhelm the hot dog, I would think, too. Like,
yeah.
do you even need the hot dog at that point? Should you just do vegan with that? I don't know.
Yeah.
So, anyway. Yeah, but, hey. All good. Well, not all good options. I'm going pizza one, beef two, hot dog a distant third.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what we've got available in the press box. we can report back and see what the offerings are at Soldier Field. But food debate aside, we can definitely agree, as we did before, that this is going to be an interesting game on Sunday. And we'll see. Panthers trying to bounce back after a loss, as we mentioned on the top of the show, against a really, really good Eagles team, one of the best in the NFL. And then they got to go to a tough environment to play the Bears. What do you think? The Panthers going to be 5-2? By the time we come back for this show,
I feel good about it. I mean, the coaching situation, something kind of fun to watch, although I guess it's not that fun to watch head coaches during a game, maybe when they throw a red flag or, you know, their face turns red. But obviously you've got Ron Rivera going back to Chicago where he played and coached. You've got John Fox, who coached in Carolina for a long time. I said it's going to be a close game. I do think it's going to be a close game, but the Panthers are 3-0 on the road. This is, you know, probably the third best team out of the four that they've played on the road. I think they'll take care of business and be 4-0 on the road, which is, you know, impressive in itself.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you. But if we're wrong, we'll be here next week to talk all about it and figure out where it is we went wrong and what happened. But I'm with you. I think the Panthers in a close one would be my prediction. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Maybe we got you excited about getting some Chicago Southeast pizza somewhere. Maybe we completely turned you off to the idea altogether. Maybe you have some really hot takes about Chicago-style hot dogs or beef sandwiches. If you do, let us know on Twitter. We're always good for a good food debate. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time.